Hello, this is Modern Vintage Gamer, and you're listening to the Scene World Podcast.
Hey, it's the Scene World Podcast. I'm me, he's that guy, and you're
Hello.
Here. In a minute, we'll be talking to Shinera, or you're going to be talking to Shinera. I was on adventures. Before that, though, we have
some news.
Well, Yurik has news. I got nothing. I am completely out of touch with the
Ooh.
Universe.
Ooh. Okay. Well, let's start on some sad news. The senior MBB from TAM unfortunately died.
Who?
MBB from TAM. Somebody I didn't know personally, but obviously a European senior. And if somebody is interested, there is a large thread about his death on Puet. So we will link to that.
Do we know how he passed?
I didn't go into details, but I already informed Alex Goldblatt, so he can update the Fallen Legends homepage from the CC4 and Amiga scene. So there will be an article on that page, on his blog as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And to go with that, the game Casebook 1899 also is delayed to be released 2024 by Gregor Müller, who is one of those people that I interviewed 2 years ago about his pixel adventure. And this game is also delayed because his father unfortunately died.
Oh, that's a shame.
So, yeah.
Hmm.
That's the reason why. There's more detail about that for anybody who wants to read about it on his Kickstarter campaign. So we will link to his X tweet or Twitter tweet, however you want to tell it, where he links to that with some details. Yeah. Well, going with that, as it was a double interview, I also did an interview with Eva Ramona Rohleder back then in the same episode of the podcast about her game, A Twisted Tale, and it's going to be released tomorrow, March the 7th.
Nice.
So that's nice. It finally has a release date. And also, 9 years ago, I guess around that. Was it 9 years ago? I don't know. About
9 years ago would have been 2015.
Yeah, 2015. I don't know if it was 2015. Let me see what year it was.
2014 was 10 years ago. That is ridiculous.
I know. No, it was actually 4 years ago.
Okay.
Gamescom 5 years ago. Gamescom 2019.
Before the dark times.
We have been invited by Frederick Schreiber about his kick-ass shooter game, first-person shooter game, Thrath, and this game has been released now on the 27th of February, so it left early access, and it has now been fully released, which is nice.
Awesome.
Yes. Also, to go along with that, the game Doom has been ported to a toothbrush with a color screen. Yes. And thanks to the Bluetooth, it even has mouse input for controls.
Boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Doom is on everything.
Right. Yes, and also the female side of the NTSC retro scene has released a 6502 microprocessor song.
Okay.
Which I also will link to. I mean, it's a bit off tone. For whatever reason, they didn't use autotune, but.
Okay.
I mean.
Because autotune is lame, yo.
Yeah, it has some cringe potential, but I guess it's fine. Anyway.
Last thing.
It contains snippets from all female creators of the retro space.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Okay, that's interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah.
We should do an all male creator one, and it'll sound terrible.
Well,
it'll be us all burping in unison.
Well, it's a bit more classy than that, I can say.
Well, I know, that's why I'm saying if guys did, it would be not classy.
Yeah. Oh, and today burps and also
armpit farts.
Today also, JamGG announced that the game Arzine Bomber, which is a Bomberman clone, you could say,
right.
Is soon to be released and can now be wishlist on Steam. So looks like JamGG is now turning into a developing company and a publisher. I did ask for a statement at the point of this recording. I didn't receive an answer yet.
Okay.
But once we have more info about it, we will mention it in the next episode's news section, of course. Mm-hmm. Anyway, JamGG, we interviewed when it was still called Pipecker back in the day.
I remember. It was a good system. It was a good service.
Yes, but
we were impressed by the lack of latency.
Exactly, because they have this technique to upload the game
to
the nearest server.
So have you used NVIDIA GeForce Now?
Not yet.
See, I use that. Because I've got games on my PC, but if I'm on the go or someplace else in the house, I want to be able to play with my laptop, which is a Mac, and some of these games just don't run it. And it's an older Mac, you know, it's like from 2012. So some of these things won't run on it. So I put NVIDIA GeForce Now on there. And, I mean, I don't notice any delay. And, you know, and I'm playing, like, No Man's Sky or you know, the footage, when I did the review for that wrestling game, AEW Final Fight, was that it?
Exactly, yes.
When I did I did that over, because I was in Baltimore, I was not at home when I did that, and I did that all using NVIDIA GeForce Now, and there is almost no latency, and it's super high, you know, I mean, you're talking HD screens or even 4K or whatever, I guess, if you can do that. I'm using an ultra wide screen here, but you know, I was using a 1440 by 900 screen on my laptop. But yeah, I mean, it is super, super fast and high quality. And I see no latency in there at all.
Nice. It's
kind of amazing. So I'm wondering if they kind of are using the same sort of, because when we talked to Pipecker, this was all kind of in its infancy still, the whole thing of streaming a game and being able to play a high quality game remotely. Was kind of like had just been you know, implemented. So seeing it without that latency was exciting. And now it's like, oh, I can, you know, everything, almost everything has that now.
Yeah, but the approach of Pipecker was different in the way, or JamGG was different in the way that actually they are not directly streaming the game, but first upload it to a server near to you, and then only linking the different locations, the servers with each other. So, so that everybody would have the same experience because they are accessing the game from their nearest server's location rather than connecting to one guy or one location or everybody to the same server.
Right.
So the servers themselves would just transfer the location data of each player, but not much more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of a cloud solution.
Mm-hmm.
A hybrid between a local and a cloud solution, kind of, yeah.
Right.
Whereas systems like Anstream directly stream the picture and the sound from the server itself.
Which is what NVIDIA GeForce now does.
Exactly, which actually can cause degradation in graphic quality, at least for Anstream. I don't know how good GeForce now handles that.
Pretty well, I can tell. Pretty well from everything I can see.
Nice. All right. Also, another story is that the lost F-Zero satellite has been reconstructed.
Right.
The story goes like that back in the day, when the SNES or Super Famicom in Japan was big, they used to have a satellite system where you could stream certain renditions of games Nintendo had at a certain time, and you could play like new F-Zero tracks with new music and new cars against other players with live commentary over satellite, and even the music would play over satellite, not directly from the console. And since such flash cartridges that were used to download the data and play them on the console via during those hours the game sessions were run, those data actually fell victim to bit rot because flash memory is kind of organic, and over time the data will just dismantle itself, rot away. That is why it's called bit rot, this phenomenon.
Right.
And what actually happened is that a while ago, a Japanese Super Famicom player, actually back in the day, he played during the sessions the tracks, you know, but he recorded his sessions on VHS tape. So a group of people from the reproduction community of the Super Nintendo community actually joined forces using an AI tool to analyze with AI the VHS recordings and recreating the tracks. So now, despite we have no data from the original game, now, thanks to that team and AI tools, the game is now fully available with all tracks. And on top of that, there are some composers who did recreations of the soundtrack to work with the sound chip of the SNES. And so it's all can be played now on your physical systems, if you like. So we will link to that.
Yeah.
The game itself even made it to archive.org. Probably so Nintendo cannot snatch it away.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. So it's a nice example of AI. Well, preserving something out of thin air, because before AI, in IT, you always say, like, you cannot create something that isn't there anymore. Now, thanks to AI, you actually can.
Right, right.
Yeah, super amazing. You might know or remember that AI previously has been used to improve like video material, for example, for the Ultimate Command and Conquer remaster release. I always forget what it's actually. I think it was called Command and Conquer Ultimate Edition. Let me look in my Steam library what actually it was called. Yeah, it was called Command & Conquer Remastered Collection.
Right.
Originally, the plan was to make the first Tiberian Dawn and Red Alert games in better resolution, at least the cutscenes, by rehiring the actors and just re-recording all the scenes from 95 and 96. But that wouldn't be possible because one of the main characters of the original game actually died of cancer. So they couldn't rehire him. So the better solution was actually to use AI to recreate. To improve the quality of the cutscenes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, well, long story short, hooray for preservation. yes. Well, two more news, actually three more news. Broken Sword Reforged, a collector's edition of the original Broken Sword. Broken Sword point and click adventure from 97 can be now backed on Kickstarter, so that's quite nice. So do that if you like. And also today, Frogwares, the studio from Ukraine and also partly in Ireland, revealed today that they also started a Kickstarter to the port The Sinking City 2, which is a horror detective game, and Sinking City 1 was actually quite a controversial experience, because they actually ran into a lawsuit with their publisher and they lost the lawsuit.
Oof.
That means
the what was thinking, the lawsuit regarding?
Well, they actually said that their publisher, which was Nocon, obviously did a breach of contract.
Okay.
And so it actually went in front of court and they lost. So that means That means that the original Sinking City is also now available on Steam.
Okay.
Because previously, what Frogware said, Nacon used an unofficial hacked version of the game and published it on Steam. But I mean, I'm not a law expert or something. And right. honestly, I prefer Steam versions over Epic Store's versions. So I didn't really care so much.
Right.
I mean, Frogwares themselves, has not a very good reputation. Some people claim in the industry that Frogwares also had fight with other publishers before, so they are not really the Robin Hood in this situation at all. I don't know what is right or wrong, actually. I'm not very political here, but anyway, so it looks like instead of going by a publisher, now Frogwares is going towards the community and getting at least initial funding via Kickstarter.
Okay.
Yeah. Now let's see if there's actually a destination set yet, a funding goal.
Right.
No, it's not. It's an upcoming project, so no details known yet.
Okay.
Hmm.
Well, give us some time.
It says, explore the flooded ruins of Arkham in the Lovecraft Lane, survival horror, upcoming for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series. Yeah.
Okay.
Did I miss something? No, I think I didn't. Oh, yes. One thing I forgot. iOS 17.4 was released yesterday, and it now includes transcripts for podcasts.
Hey, now.
Even for past episodes. That means if you're on an Apple device, you can actually see transcripts of...
So you can read this if you want.
Exactly, yes. And interesting, in the last episode's new section, we actually mentioned a URL of the Comic-Con UK discount tickets you could buy, and actually the automatism of the transcript included a clickable link for that URL we mentioned by voice, which is super amazing. And it actually worked to this degree that it's actually the correct URL. So doesn't have a problem with my German accent for some reason.
There you go.
Good to know. Yeah. Well, yes, so that's also good for the hearing impaired, you know. So more accessible. We are more accessible.
Yeah.
To people now.
Very cool.
Yeah, and that would be all the news I've got.
That's all. Yeah, I don't have anything. So.
Nice. Yeah. So let's jump to Brazil.
Yes, indeed. And
talk a bit about Brazilian game history and being a YouTuber.
Yeah.
And he also runs a wiki about game history in Brazil. So a lot to learn about it.
Yes, indeed.
Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Today we have another guest, and today it's Guilherme from Brazil, and you are actually known for two things, basically. Your English YouTube channel, which is actually called Kirinea,
but you can't call it that.
Ah, okay. Yeah, well, I pronounced it English. I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah,
and unfortunately in Brazilian Portuguese, but It's the encyclopedia of video game in Brazil.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome.
That website is in Portuguese because when I first thought about doing it, I thought about reaching a Brazilian audience at first. But when I go check there's a page where you can check where the people come from, and I get lots of views from other countries. And sometimes I think, well, maybe I should do it in English. I don't know. But yeah. Right now it's only in Portuguese. But mostly I have images there now. So I think that images speak for themselves. I don't think that it's too hard to understand what's going on.
And you can use AI for translation, you know?
Yeah, fortunately. We live in a splendid time for that.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, the reason why I wanted to talk to you is actually you have a lot of special content, like you remember wrong how the theme of Super Mario Bros. On the NES sounds, or the buggy Brazilian bootleg of Battletoads, and all those historical depths videos that you are doing. It's so important because that's actually knowledge and info that would get lost if nobody else is covering it. And nobody else is covering it in English, at least from what I saw on YouTube. So it's very important, you know. So that is why I was very lucky when you followed me on Twitter after I did my tweet, which is now called X, because I found no other way of contacting you. But then the possibility was there to send you a private message. I was like, wow, now finally I can invite him to the podcast. But perhaps we should start with the first question that I usually ask our guests is, like, how did you get involved in video games from the get-go? What was your first touching point, perhaps?
Okay, well, we're back in 1985, I believe.
Ooh.
My older brother got an Atari 2600 for Christmas. So that's when I began. And I began playing Atari 2600. But 1 year later, the same brother got a TK-85. It's a clone of the ZX Spectrum. The ZX Spectrum 81, nice. If I'm not wrong. So in Brazil, it's complicated because it's completely different from what you get in Europe or the United States, where, for instance, I know that your magazine started specializing in Commodore 64. We never got the original Commodore 64 here. We only got clones for the PCs and then for the video games, the consoles. So the Atari 2600 is an exception because Atari made an agreement with a local company called Polyvox, and they released this officially in Brazil in 1984. So we got it a little late in Brazil, if you think of it, because the video game crash in the United States in 1983 is actually the video game boom in Brazil.
Yeah.
When the Americans were lost in interest in the Atari, we were getting it for the first time. So it's kind of different.
Actually, the same time the boom was happening in Spain.
Mm.
So yeah. So everybody who isn't American is like, what crash? We don't have we never had any crash, you know?
Precisely.
You know? So yeah, I see. Yeah, but that's a problem with many people. They project what they know from their country and their life to other cultures and other regions, and then you figure out like it's totally wrong. That's actually not the case. So this is why it's important to make such videos, interviews, and actually cover that and preserve it for the future, and especially outside of Brazil. And many people even don't know that there are tech toys still doing new Mega Drives and new Master Systems. I mean, listeners of the podcast know it because we had Stefano Arnold, the founder of Tech Toy, two times in the podcast, and he spoke about it in length. So, yeah.
I watched those interviews you did, and it's interesting because every time he does an interview like that, he lets slip a little bit of knowledge that nobody had seen before in other interviews. So I learned new things when watching your interviews with him, because said things there that he didn't say in other interviews. And yeah, so Brazil is really different in that aspect, because in 1983 and 84, we had the first second generation consoles. And then we only got to the third generation in 1989. When Gradiente and CCE and Dynacom were companies, local companies that released clone consoles in Brazil. So my first contact with that generation was with the Top Game VG9000, which is a NES clone manufactured by CCE or CCE, like we say it here. And this console, it has a system that allows you to play both the NES games and the Famicom games. So it's nice because we had a broader library of games that we could access. And the companies that were selling the games here, they were pirating the stuff they were selling here. But we didn't perceive it as piracy because the companies were local companies with lots of credibility. They sold the games legally in stores and shopping malls, and you would go anywhere here and you would find those games. You would buy those games legally. It wasn't something that, oh, it's shady business. No, it was official. And Nintendo only got here to release the NES in 1993. So it was much, much later, 4 years later.
Richard, was actually the Super Nintendo already?
Yeah, they released first the Super Nintendo, and 6 months later they released the NES. So
exactly.
Everybody had the NES clones already. Nobody wanted the original NES anymore, you know. But at the same time, and that's interesting about Tectoy released the Master System here in 1989 also. So it was the same year the NES clones arrived. But Tectoy made an agreement with Sega and released it officially here. So they fought piracy all the time. They were dealing, actually, their main, the word just went away. Their main competition, sorry. Their main competition was unofficial products, clone consoles and clone games. But they didn't have any Sega pirate things here, because Tectoy would shut down every try in that way. And we had one company, there was one company called Dynacom that tried to release a clone Mega Drive. It was called the Mega Vision. But Tectoy, at the same time, they went to court and said, no, you must shut down this business. We don't want it here. And they got it shut down. And that item nowadays is very expensive because it's rare.
That's also interesting. You should make a video about that, because, of course, those are things that are so much hidden that, of course, Stefano Arnold would never talk about.
No.
Court cases and stuff, you know. But the interesting thing is, you mentioned you listened to both interviews, and the second interview is actually interesting because we had Andrew Fisher, our gaming expert, in the episode as well as co-moderator. And some point in the interview, I was like, okay, I'm not needed anymore, because Andrew and Stefano, they were nerding and pushing each other up with the knowledge they know about video games, especially in the region. I was like, at some point, like, okay, I can go, because compared to them, I know next to nothing about the history of video games, because especially that one point where Stefano Arnold was actually calling up the development department to ask about if the if light guns are really compatible with the new Mega Drive. Yeah, that was like super awesome. We kept that all in the episode because I was like, oh my god, what's happening here? That's the matter of detail.
Yeah.
That Tectoy puts in this limited edition from 2017, which is 7 years already. Is amazing.
Yeah.
You know? I saw on their YouTube they were actually releasing a video of Mortal Kombat to show off the sound possibilities of their clone ship they had to develop because Yamaha wouldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. Actually, that's something that Stefano, because he isn't the tech guy, you know, he's not in the engineering area. He didn't know at the first interview that what they did there was an FPGA. Andrew asked him about it, and I don't know right now, but I'll let you know in the next interview. And it's an FPGA. So that's also something very interesting, because what happened was, in 2017, they released this new Mega Drive, and it was FPGA, and then it was the same chip that you find in some other clones that AT Games released in China. So there's this company, AT Games, they released several clones. You probably know the Atari Flashback ones.
Oh, of course,
and
yeah.
It's the same company. So it's the same chip that they use, and they use a similar technology. And there's a serious problem in their clone Mega Drive, because the sound is completely off. You know, the music is very, very wrong. There's something about the clock that's wrong. And what is awesome about it is that Tectoy knew it wasn't very nice, but they released it anyway. And a couple of months later, two Brazilian fans that bought the console discovered what was wrong, and they made a custom firmware to fix the issue.
Oh, really?
And they send it to Tectoy and say, oh, we fixed it. And Tectoy gets their code, puts in the console and says, okay, we were wrong. These fans fixed our product, and we're releasing it for you now. And it's awesome, because now the audio is much closer to the original. And this guy... No, of course. No, it's not the same thing. The original is much better. We know that. But it's passable, you know. Before, it was completely wrong. You would listen it and you would say, no, this is bugged. But now you would just say, it's different. It's not so good, but it's okay.
So now you tell me I actually have to get a second one, because I obviously have one of the first releases.
You don't have to, because you can update the firmware. You can use an SD card and you update the firmware. I'll send you the link to download the firmware.
You should. You should. And actually tell me how to do it, because...
Yeah, it's very easy.
Obviously, I don't know, because everything is in Portuguese. And
The good thing about it is that one of the guys that did it, he's called Neto. He has a website that is in English and has the instructions.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he did it better, because after he sent the code to Tectoy, he then said, okay, I'm going to do my own stuff now. And he did a custom firmware all from scratch. And it's
awesome.
Called Neto MD-DOS. It's like the MS-DOS, but it's MD-DOS because it's Mega Drive DOS. And it supports the keyboard and supports... other peripherals. It's awesome, and you should check it out. I'll send you the link, and you can download and install. And if you have any doubts, you can contact me.
Yeah, we should. I actually have one of those clones. I'm actually looking at if I can find the video right now, but somehow I can't right now. But there's actually one that is called the FireCore.
I heard about it.
It's a portable Mega Drive, and it's
have that one.
You have that one, and the sound is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, it's same problem. It's the same chip. This the name of the chip is Red Key 2500. It's the name of the chip. And the good thing is there are two releases. Tectoy released this in Brazil. That's why I have it. And there are two releases in Brazil. One that comes with 20 games and you can't change the games. And the other one comes with, I believe, another 20 games, but there's an SD card input. So you can update the firmware too. And Atto also did an update for that one. It's unfortunate that I'm talking to you. I'm not at home right now. I'm at my brother's.
No problem.
If I was at my home, I would be showing you all this stuff.
I mean, you could send a video afterwards if you like.
Okay. No problem.
And anyway, okay. It's interesting because here in Europe, the FireCore was actually released in two versions. Hmm. One had a switch on the bottom where you could switch between NTSC and PAL.
Hmm.
And this one actually has the issue that the region switch doesn't work perfectly. So if you, for example, insert a Dune 2, which was released in German language, in Germany, mm-hmm. which is obviously then a European release, you get an error message saying this game is for European market only, despite you put the switch on PAL.
To PAL.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But there is a second hardware revision that has the same switch, but the switch doesn't function, and instead it has region audio detection.
Hmm.
And that fixes the issue totally. So it's automatically auto-detecting what kind of region is expected from the console.
That's interesting.
So, and I was lucky because when you buy it from Amazon or somewhere, you don't know what hardware revision you get. And I was lucky to get the second one that still has a switch, but it's no function. I was like, cool, I got the newer version. Yeah.
That's nice.
But none of those versions have NSD card slot, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's something that Tectoy wanted to do with the new Mega Drive because they knew that they wouldn't be able to get the licenses to release new cartridges for the console. They only got the license for one game, which is Monica na Terra dos Monstros, which is a reskin version of Wonder Boy in Monster World for the Mega Drive, with the Brazilian character Monica, which is a comics character here in Brazil.
Wow.
Very popular. I'm just checking if the FireCore is exactly the same that Tectoy released here, because if that's different, you would be disappointed with me. Let me see here. But I think it's the same one. I'm not sure.
Actually, it's not actually only called...
It's the portable is the same one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I found it. It's actually not only called FireCore. It has a very complex name. It's called Retro Bit FireCore Sega RetroGen. That's the full name in Germany. Retro Bit FireCore Sega RetroGen.
I'm looking at one here. It's from 80 Games also. It's called Sega Genesis Ultimate Portable Game Player and has 80 built-in games.
Okay, mine has none. They never included any games.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And also
how would you play games in it? Because if you
cartridges,
said it,
you put in cartridges.
But it's not a portable one, though.
Yes.
So, but
it's a portable console with a cartridge slot.
Like the Nomad?
Like the Nomad, exactly.
Wow. No. It's completely different than ours then. Because ours is very small with a small screen. You don't have space for cartridges.
No. It's called Retrobit FireCore Sega RetroGen. That's the full name of the console. And so it's a different one that has a similar name, okay.
Yeah, but yeah. I'll send you pictures of the Tectoy one and you can compare and see if it's similar or not.
Actually, Linus Tech Tips made a video about it.
I just sent you in the chat a picture of the one that looks like the Tech Toy one.
Actually, and that's the video from the...
Oh, I see. It's different. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's obviously different. They also released in Canada because it's Linus Tech Tip. It's the Canadian YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you can actually see it in the thumbnail. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said that it's different. I see.
No worries. Yeah.
but I believe I heard it about. That's why I thought that it was the same chip, because there's another one, the one that I sent the link to you. It's called FireCore 2, and it's just the same as the Tech Toy one.
And also, it has another issue that I just remember. It has 6 buttons. But the mode switch between 6 and 4 buttons is missing. So games like Double Dragon 2 can't be played because it is detecting...
a 6-button controller and it doesn't work, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
that's a problem.
Yeah, so this machine has a couple of issues.
Yeah. To be completely honest, I'm not the biggest fan of portable consoles, you know. I just prefer to sit in front of my TV and play games like that, because portable consoles always have those issues and you can't always play all the games and stuff. But I understand that it's a lot easier for many people, and I understand the appeal.
Yeah, but the problem is back in 2011 when I got this unit, you had no other options.
Yeah,
because the other consoles were even worse. That was long before we had flashback consoles.
Nah, I see.
You know, it was pretty bad.
Not that flashback is a better option. I mean, many of those consoles are not that good. I mean, many products that AT Games released have the same backlash of, oh, it doesn't work very well, the sound is off, and things like that. I know that the Atari ones are okay, and the controls work just fine with the original console also.
The main issue is actually that, I totally forgot the name. The problem is that the earlier consoles that weren't portable had actually the issue, like the first version of this console, that the game simply wouldn't run. So because the region lock detection was totally off. So that was our issue.
Yeah.
Having bad sound, bad graphics, or sometimes the controller doesn't work is just a secondary issue if the game doesn't run at all, you know. That's the thing. And just then Sega decided, like, okay, we do it on our own, because those companies are horrible in it, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know why it took it so long for them to do that, you know. It was really strange, because when Tectoy released the new Mega Drive in 2017, I believe the Mini NES was already released.
And came 2015, yeah.
Yeah, and they had people from Sega of Japan here in Brazil to release the console. And the person who was here said something like, wow, this is like a time travel for us, because we're releasing again a product that is 30 years old. And it was something like he was saying, I don't even know what I'm doing here, because this is something we wouldn't be doing anyway. But I believe 1 or 2 years later, they released their own version of the Genesis Mini or Mega Drive Mini. And I thought, well, that was what Tectoy was trying to do. Actually, Tectoy is a company that is fun because they do things that sometimes are very interesting or very brave, but with the wrong timing, you know. they do it in the wrong timing or in the wrong market and things like that.
like the Street the Fighter Zeebo. Release.
Yeah, that's one of them. But I was thinking about the Zeebo.
You Zeebo, okay, right? that also failed. That was actually a feature. Yeah,
that's something that I want to do a video about sometime.
Actually, interesting that you mentioned earlier, because I went through the hassle and asking some of my non-gaming Brazilian friends to get games that were only released by Tectoy. And Duke Nukem 3D, for example, it looks like a copy, but it's actually how it's originally released by Tectoy. The quality of the label and so on is so bad that you would think it's a pirate's copy. But no, that's actually how it was released in Brazil. So yeah. I'm very surprised by the bad quality of the original. I mean, even the Woody Woodpecker game that came in the clamshell and all that, the clamshell, the plastic quality is so bad that you would think, like, oh my God, it's almost falling apart.
But now I'm thinking if you really got the original one, because there was some things in Brazil that weren't of a good quality, but I believe that Tectoy products, at least for a long period, were good. So the label in the Duke Nukem 3D, I agree with you, it's not the best one. But the clamshells, the Tectoy clamshells, they are actually something that are sold in a high price here in Brazil. People prefer it to the Chinese copies because the Chinese copies are really bad. Now I'm thinking if you really got a Tectoy one or not. Do you have it here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, let me check it out. I mean, I can have a look. No worries.
Let's check it out.
Yeah.
But you know there were many different kinds of labels that's exciting. Okay.
Yeah, I found those. So those are the two I've got. In the clamshell, that's actually the Street Fighter one.
Okay.
That's of a good quality. And that's Woody Woodpecker. And you can see it's actually...
Not original.
Not original?
I can see from here. Open it up. Open it up.
Okay, that's why the quality is so bad.
Does it read Tectoy in the middle of the clamshell? The inside of the clamshell. No, the inside.
Okay, inside, let's see.
Yeah, open it.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, no. That's a rental store clamshell.
That is why it obviously has a phone number.
Perfectly. Precisely. That's the case. If you want to buy good Tectoy products, I have just the man for you. It's a guy who sells items in really good shape, and he's really, really nitpicky about this kind of thing. You know, he only sells products in good quality, and he uses to sell to people abroad. So people who buy
that's a bag actually horrible quality.
Yeah. No. Unfortunately, you didn't get the original product.
Well, I mean, it was super cheap, but never mind.
Yeah. But look at the other one, the Street Fighter one. See if the inside is says Tectoy in the middle.
Let's see. Wow, that's so
hard to open.
Hard to open? No, it doesn't say either, but the quality is very good.
But the original ones,
wait. It says Tectoy in the middle.
Okay, yeah.
Here we go.
Perfect. Yeah, this one is original.
Okay,
you see the difference in quality?
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Another thing, you don't have the manuals, right?
No.
So if you had the manuals, there's another thing you could check. The manual has a sticker with a serial number. Mm. And if you open the cartridge, there's the same sticker with the same serial number. If the numbers doesn't match, someone put a manual from one game and the cartridge from another, you know, and assemble the thing. But that's okay if you don't have the manual.
You
wouldn't expect.
I also got Nightmare Circus, which is like
very rare.
The very rarest game, but it's actually a reprint. And it only works on some consoles, not on all. So it's something weird about it.
We're having many problems right now in Brazil because used to buy many things from China from sites like AliExpress and stuff like that. And at first, the Brazilian government didn't have any kind of law about taxing those things. Okay. But right now, the Brazilian government started taxing those things, even the cheaper ones, because before it was like up to $50, you didn't have to pay any taxes, but now you have to pay. And so people in China are also having trouble because they have to declare the right way, the way that the Brazilian government wants it to be declared. And we have the same problem here now.
Exactly. Yeah. But fortunately with AliExpress, right now, since 2021, July 1st, we have a new law. And actually, it's working perfectly. It's amazing how perfect it works.
It's happening now because when the companies, for instance, AliExpress and what was the other one? Shopee and other sites like that, they are doing now the same stuff. And now it comes with a declaration that says Remessa Conforme, which is the name of the law here. So when it gets here and they see that sticker there, they say, okay, everything is fine and the things arrive very quickly here.
Exactly. We have the same sticker called IOSS, European Union Electronic Pre-Notification of Customs. So Well, anyway, now back to your YouTube channel. I mean, that's actually why we are talking. I would like to know, how did you decide what topics to cover? I mean, we mentioned the Battletoads one. Yeah. Then also we mentioned the one about the wrong sounding of the Super Mario Bros. Theme. But also you make music remixes and stuff. So it's a whole bunch of topics to cover with YouTube channel.
Yeah, the thing is, if you dig it about the videos there, you may have seen also some heavy metal covers there. So I started the channel, actually, like many people, I think that I started the channel, I didn't think about a specific subject. You know, I was just putting videos there. But when the COVID-19 thing happened, we decided to do videos, collab videos with friends, and we started doing the covers. And that thing was something that my channel was focused on. But I also always wanted to talk about video games. I love video games since that time in 1985 Christmas, I told you. So it was something that I was very interested in, but I never got the time to actually do something focused on that. And the time when I was doing the covers was something good for me because I learned how to edit videos. I didn't know anything about that, you know? I never used a software for editing videos before that. So when I learned that, I thought, now I can do something about it. And the Battletoads bootleg cartridge was something that really bugged me, because the story I tell in that video, it's real. You know, I really passed the things that happened in that sequence. It's the same thing that happened in my life. I was playing the game many years later, and I was thinking, well, something's wrong here. There is a level missing. What's wrong here? I remember the level. I remember playing this level. How could it possibly happen? And I thought, well, maybe it's a Mandela effect. You know, I was thinking I did it, but it didn't happen. And I thought, well, I have to check it out. I have to see how it would work. And when someone told me that I could dump the ROM via audio, I thought, well, this is amazing. I mean, anyone who used computers in the 80s and used cassette tapes to record the games and record the programs and then load knew how to do it. And I did it when I was a kid. And I thought, well, this is amazing. I want to do that. I want to see it. And when I did the video, I must be honest, I wasn't expecting anything. I mean, it was a cover channel, only heavy metal stuff, not much else. And then thought, well, that's how it worked. And I got an awesome response. I mean, in 1 week, I had, like, I don't know, 5,000 views, which was amazing for my channel, because I only got a couple hundred, you know?
But and hopefully thought, it's wow. Improving now after this interview.
Yeah, yeah. Every video, and that's the thing. When I saw that it was working, I thought, well, one feedback I got was, this is interesting because you're because we live outside your country, and you have a totally different experience than we do. And I thought, well, this is something that is interesting to share. And that was something that was also linked to my other interests, because as you said, I have this wiki where I post stuff released in Brazil. And my main motivation when I bought, I built that wiki was, I was working for many years in Mobi Games, which is an amazing database of video games. And Mobi Games only covers official stuff.
Oh, and yeah. So, you mean that famous database that everybody knows?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Mobi Games, MOBY Games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So they only cover official stuff there. So for many years, I contributed Master System stuff because Tectoy was an official company here. I contributed Mega Drive stuff, but Nintendo stuff, only the official things were just a small part of what happened in Brazil. And I was always bugged about it because I said, well, people should keep those information exactly. Alive, you know?
Exactly.
And then I thought, well, I must do something about it. So in 2012, I started that wiki. But I only made a dozen pages there, and then I stopped doing it because I thought, well, this is too much work. I don't know if I can do it, and other stuff happened, and I let it aside. But when I saw that video was doing well and everything, I thought, well, I guess I have to go back to it and give another effort to make it work. And that's what I thought about the channel. I thought, well, it's nice to have somewhere where people from other countries can go and see what's like to be a gamer in Brazil in the 80s and the 90s. That's where when I grew up and when I learned about the stuff I did and everything. So, for instance, the video you mentioned about the Super Mario Brothers, that's the one that really skyrocketed the channel. Now, so
yeah. The algorithm worked for me because yeah. It was suggested. I was like, wow, what's that? I'm like, oh my God, this accent, where is it coming from? And then I saw like, oh, Brazil. I'm like, oh my God, somebody in Brazil doing English content.
Yeah, I do that all the time because, you know, in that video you mentioned the Super Mario one, there were some people, oh, this guy can't pronounce brothers right, so I'm leaving. And I said, what? Isn't the word brother? What's the problem with the word? I don't know what I'm saying wrong here. And it's bad because when people say that, I say, oh, sorry. English is not my first language, you know. And the problem is another thing that people were mentioning was the way I pronounced timber, which is like timber but not timber, like I said in the video. And I said, oh, I apologize. I knew I was saying it in a way that maybe many people wouldn't understand, and that's why I put the word in bold letters in the screen. Okay. Right in the moment I say it, you know, because now you know what the word is. you won't be mistaking it. And another thing I like to do, it's I like to put subtitles all the time, because then people will know that if I'm saying something wrong, well, it's written there, it's easier to read sometimes. But I know that some people don't like reading, so I don't know which one is worse.
I actually hate subtitles. Yeah.
Some people hate it. Some people love it. I don't know. I learned with video games. You know.
Yeah.
Video games taught me English. Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't help for me.
Yeah, for me it was a huge help. From 95 and on, I started playing video games on my PC. And the point and click adventures were something that were in that time. And that helps a lot, because, you know, it's the perfect structure, because you have an object, you have a verb, and you have a person. So it's subject, object, verb. It's perfect. Yeah. Pick the spoon and put in the dish, nice. You know, things like that.
Dishwasher. So, the problem with Germany is, Germany was one of the, I think it was the only country actually where we had German translations of games like Maniac Mansion and Zack McCracken. So I was like, oh, okay, there's a German version.
It took us many, many years to get translations for those games. I believe the first game we had that were fully translated in Portuguese was Full Throttle. And Green Fandango had all the voices dubbed in Portuguese.
The famous 3D adventure. The only 3D adventure that was not a failure at that time.
Yeah. It's amazing game.
I mean, society is still sometimes awful. I mean, it still happens today. Just a few months ago, Robocop Rogue City was released.
Yeah, I see.
And of course, there was a comment like, no translation from sound into German. Again, not buying. And that, of course, was by from a German. And the first reaction, of course, was learn English.
the exact same thing happens in Brazil. Every time Nintendo releases a new game, someone in Brazil says, I don't believe they don't have Brazilian Portuguese in this game. And the first reaction is just like that, you know, go learn English. You have to learn English. It's the same thing here in Brazil. Exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
particularly with Nintendo products all the time, because Nintendo has this messy relationship with Brazil, that they came here, they stayed a while, they went away in the mid 90s. Nowadays, I don't know how the representation here is, because I don't buy modern consoles. I don't have a Switch or things like that, so I don't know. But I know that people complain all the time that Nintendo don't care about the Brazilian markets in the ways that they used to back in the 90s.
I really like your mindset. I wish more people from Brazil would have this mindset of like, I'm doing something for the global audience. That's totally amazing. It's so important, because nobody else would do it, you know?
And I think that it's interesting, because, you know, you want to talk to people who want to talk back to you. So if I'm going to tell these stories to Brazilians, maybe they're going to, oh, okay, we know that, go away. Here comes the nerd again, you know. So it's different when you're talking to people from abroad. They oh wow, this is completely different from what I lived in my country. And so the conversation starts there, and I'm getting awesome reactions, because that video about the Mario game, I had answers from people from Egypt, for instance. And I know nothing about the gaming market in Egypt. I asked the person, did Nintendo sell officially the NES in Egypt? And he said, no, but I had an official NES because someone brought it from the United States for me and stuff. I don't know about you, but I know nothing about gaming in Africa. The whole continent, you know, it's a huge continent, many countries. And I know nothing about it.
I made an interview with the guy in Ghana, who is actually building up an esports community in Africa. Is that a topic that interests you? We got you covered there.
I'm gonna look it up. Because that's something that I find really interesting, you know, because when I did the video about the Mario thing, for people who didn't watch the video, the difference in sound from the original hardware to clone hardwares happens because the main chip, the CPU, is different. And there is a difference in sound that I explained in the video. And some people who lived in places like Brazil, like Russia, like many, many Asian countries that were not Japan, they got those clone consoles and they learned to play those games listening to the sound in a different way. And I think that's something really interesting because in a way we connect to people who live kilometers away, you know. I don't know nothing about the reality of life in Russia, for instance, but I know that people that play Super Mario Brothers in Russia heard the same music I heard, you know.
Yeah.
And it's different from the music you guys heard in Europe. Not only because of the chip, but also because of the pulse
speed
system that makes
Well, the thing is, fortunately, we also got an interview with the Russian Computer Museum in Moscow before all the mess with the Ukraine started. Fortunately, we also got that covered. Interesting point for you.
Your podcast is material for years to come, I think, because
I hope, yeah. It's very it's very hard to convince people to speak English. That's actually the main point, you know.
I'm just now writing a script for a video about the sound chip in Master System, because I think that the Master System has a bad reputation when it comes to sound. People seem to hate the PSG, but I think that it was underexplored, you know. I think that maybe people should know some games that did it well. And that's something I'm trying to do with my last videos. You know, I've been doing lots of Master System remixes to show what the video game was capable. And I'm trying to do a longer video talking about the Master System, talking about the sound of it, and talking about why it's different from other consoles of the time and why it could be better if we had a different situation back in the 80s and the 90s. Because I think the main problem with the Master System was that it wasn't very well marketed in the United States.
Could be.
It went very well here in Brazil. I know it went well in Europe, but I think that it took Sega some time to know what they were doing.
Yeah.
They only got it right with the Genesis and the Mega Drive.
That's right. Here in Germany, nobody cared about the Master System. It was all NES, and then suddenly they improved with the Mega Drive. But the problem was the Mega Drive and this Game Gear was like double the price of the Nintendo hardware. So you had to have rich parents. So my parents were like, okay, you get a Game Boy, it doesn't have color, but you can get two games for the price of one Game Gear game. You know, and the same with the NES games and Super NES, way cheaper than Sega.
In Brazil, it was the same thing. The Tech Toy
Products. But other way around, wasn't it?
No. That's something really interesting because Tech Toy Products were more expensive than the clone ones because the clone companies didn't pay the license for the products.
No license fees. Yeah.
So they could sell it way cheaper. And that's why I think that Stefano is an awesome CEO because he
fortunately he retired a few years back.
Yeah. because he made the thing work even if he sold it for a higher price. But there's also another part of the story. That is, I think that because Tectoy was so successful and was just one company, you guys abroad hear a lot about it, but you hear much less about the clone companies here.
True.
And fortunately, this year, just now, this month, a new book was released, unfortunately in Portuguese, but it's a book about the clone consoles in Brazil. This amazing channel called Warp Zone. If you check in YouTube, Warp Zone, they release their content in Portuguese, but I think that maybe there's English subtitles. I'm not sure, but sorry, that's what we have. And they just did this book telling the story of the clones, and they challenged the opinion of Stefano, because Stefano says that sometime around the 80s and around the 90s, sorry, they had 80% of market share in Brazil. And in this book, these guys, they say, oh, maybe that's not quite right, because maybe they are talking about official numbers, and unofficial numbers could show a different picture. Because I was one of those guys who had an NES clone. I didn't have a Master System. I played Master System games with my Mega Drive using the power base adapter. And I only got a Mega Drive because my brother started working, and the first paycheck he got, he bought a new Mega Drive for us. And just because of that, because my father was one of those cheap guys who wouldn't expend any money on new stuff, and he bought me a clone console of the cheapest price possible. And I don't regret it, because it was a very good console.
Yeah, I mean, we have to take into account that necessity and importance of things in Latin America is different from the rest of the world.
That's nice.
Actually, I didn't want to speak to you about Brazilian culture, but now we did. Yeah, now we did. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's no problem. It's all mixed up in a way. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so... So let me ask you, what are your future plans for your retro activities, YouTube and stuff?
Okay, so first of all, I told you about the stuff I'm doing about the Master System audio. I'm doing a video about that. And I want to talk more about some things that were Brazilian exclusive. So for instance, I told you about the Monica games. I was writing a script about it. And I have also thought about writing a script about the Zeebo, I told you. So it's another stuff I want to talk about. The problem is with YouTube, like everything on the internet, it's always hard to be the first one to talk about something, you know? It's hard to not find someone that already talked about that stuff before.
But with the Brazilian content, it's super easy, because I don't know any other Brazilian YouTuber doing content in English, right?
Yeah, that's my edge. That's my difference, maybe, because I'm Brazilian. Because, for instance, about the Zeebo, there's many videos in English, but not by Brazilians. Usually what happens is some YouTuber from, I don't know, UK has a contact in Brazil, imports the stuff, exactly. And show it on the channel.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So that's the difference, I think, because I can talk about it firsthand. You know, I lived it when it was happening. For instance, for the Zeebo,
right,
I was
right
here when Tectoy announced it, when Tectoy developed it, when Tectoy released it. I was one of the first people who bought it. There was a small community of people who hanged around a forum on the internet who talked about these games came in out and stuff. And so I have an experience that is different from people who just get to know the console on second hand, you know? So that's the difference, I think. So that's where I want to go. I want to talk more about stuff that happened in Brazil that people, I believe, don't know yet. Or if they know, they know it from people who didn't live here. And I think that I can give a better picture, or maybe a more complete picture. I don't know.
So I need to undust my Master System and take some pictures and make some videos.
Please, because I want to talk about that. I didn't know about that. It's a very interesting stuff. You told me about not working with the Tectoy cartridges. And that's something interesting to know, because I know that Tectoy products are something that many Europeans are buying, because I guess people have a full set of European games and they say, well, what's next?
Games. So the gringo bonus for such games is amazing. I mean, even 14 years ago, I could get a Duke Nukem 3D for 40 euros and on eBay 150.
But that's bad for us also, you know, because what happens is the more you guys buy it, the less we have it here, so the prices go up for us too. So we sometimes play about it. We say, stop the extractivism. You know, you're extracting our gold here. It's somewhat like, you know, the colonial times when Portugal were taking our gold to their country. And, taking our gold away.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Stop the extractivism, you know?
Yeah, I remember another famous example was actually Double Dragon 2. Because this game for the Master System, for the Mega Drive, which was actually mostly only available in Japan and Brazil for whatever reason. I didn't know why Brazilians were such a fan of the Japanese Double Dragon 2, but that was the case.
It's interesting because some games, I don't know why, they just get super hyped here. For instance, I don't know if you know a game for the Super NES, the, the name just went away. It's a racing game. Just a minute, I'll remember it.
There are not many racing games on the Super Nintendo, so.
Yeah. Top Gear.
Top Gear, yeah.
So this game is, people are crazy about this game here, you know? So and it's to an extent that the main theme of the game, many people play here covers using different instruments, and people love the theme, and I know that this game isn't so much popular, you know, in Europe or United States.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because I don't know why this got so popular here. And I have a friend that he has a channel in YouTube, which only shows people racing against each other using emulators and online matches, you know? It's something that I don't understand. Even being Brazilian, I don't understand why people in 2023 are playing online games of racing game released in the 90s and nobody else knows about this game, and it's crazy. But some games get really popular here, and I just can't explain it.
I actually have Top Gear 2, and I think there was a third part, Top Gear 3000, that was
3000,
actually,
yeah.
That was actually horrible, and I got it too. Yeah. I got a full set of the game series. Yeah.
The first one had that soundtrack that goes. Everybody loves that, you know.
Yeah.
There are people playing in the accordion and stuff.
Now let me think. Top Gear is actually a copycat of a famous Amiga game.
Lotus.
Exactly. It's a copy of Lotus Esprit Turbo. Esprit Turbo. That's a game series. Yeah.
I know that because I used to play those on the PC, and there's a version for the PC.
Yeah.
And I remember the game, and I remember how it looks like the Top Gear game.
And the interesting thing is for the Mega Drive, they never released the first part, but they released the first part, which is actually the second part on the Amiga. Released it as the first part on the Mega Drive.
The Jewel.
Exactly. Yeah, and exactly. And the third part is actually the second, and the second part is actually the third part of the Amiga. So I don't know why they never released the first game from the Amiga on the Mega Drive, but this is how it went. So the numbers are totally wrong on the Mega Drive versions. But it's actually famous because it has a special shell, so you can differentiate it on the Mega Drive.
It was EA who released it. I don't remember now.
I think it was EA. Yeah, could be. Yeah. Could be.
Because the cartridge, the EA cartridges are different. They have that yellow tab
on the exactly. Side. Yes.
Yeah.
I see. You know a lot. Yeah. That's the difference between you and me. I know almost nothing about the Brazilian market. You know a lot about the Brazilian market, and on top, from the other markets as well.
But we only know about the other markets because we got a lot of imported stuff. Because as I said to you, sometimes things wouldn't get released here, but people would get from other countries and bring it here, you know?
Like so it happened a lot. The Japanese version of Double Dragon 2.
Yeah. And that happened because we have a neighbor country, Paraguay, just to our western side, and they have a custom system very different from ours, so people would travel there, buy stuff there much cheaper and bring it to Brazil because they had an agreement and wouldn't pay any taxes and stuff like that. So that would happen a lot, you know. So many people didn't buy that's something interesting also, because you may think, oh, people in Brazil had Master System and Mega Drives and stuff. But many of my friends had Mega Drives that came from Paraguay. And those Mega Drives were Japanese ones and not Brazilian. So that's why many people had it switched, because they knew they had to switch the console to get the games here to play it on the...
And that is also why some Japanese versions like Double Dragon 2 were so famous in Brazil.
Probably that's the reason. Because what happened was that people would buy the game there. Well, the first Double Dragon was very popular, you know. The first game I remember playing on a Master System was Double Dragon 1. I had a neighbor. He just got the video game console. It was brand new. Nobody knew about it.
Unfortunately, it's a bad game.
But people were crazy about it, because think about it. Nobody knew anything about the third generation. Everybody had Atari 2600. Then you come with something full of colors, with polyphonic music. I went crazy when I saw that, you know? I thought, wow, this is amazing.
I know. Actually, the latest game released for the Atari VCS was actually Double Dragon in 98 for the Brazilian market.
And that's a terrible part of the game.
I know. And the first time I saw it on YouTube, I thought it was a fan-made game.
Yeah.
I was like, no, it's not a homebrew. It's an official commercial release. The last commercial release for the VCS from the main market.
Because we had it later here, as I told you, you know.
And the music was horrible.
When we got those consoles here, my console, my NES clone was a top game, and it came with the Tiger Heli. It's a game from Toplan. It's a shoot 'em up, top view. It's a helicopter you control. It's a simple game, very simple graphics. But I remember my jaw just dropped. I saw, wow, what is it? This is amazing. This is something else. I believe that the leap we had from the second generation to the third was much bigger than we had from the third to the fourth and so on, you know? It was a huge leap. It was miles away. And we were talking about the first games. If you think about the last games, you know, Battletoads, for instance, we were talking about Battletoads. Battletoads is amazing. The graphics are spectacular. I think that was DNS at its finest, you know. So we were talking about why some games are popular here. I believe that's the reason. We got many stuff from Asia. We had many, when we talk about the NES, many games came from Asia, from Hong Kong specifically, and Taiwan. Two places that we got many things from. And those games were released here. Sometimes there was a company here that the only thing they did was to place a sticker in the cartridge with their brand. So it was called Supercharger. They brought those games, those colorful Famicom games, you know, plastic cases with yellow, purple, green, and they just stick it, just place the sticker, Supercharger, and sold it here. So we got many things from abroad. That's why I think that we ended up having a much richer market, because we had things from all the places, you know. One market I think we didn't get much stuff, and I think it was bad for us, was the PC market, the not the IBM, but the personal computers that came before, that you guys in Europe had with the
Commodore 64, Amiga,
all the stuff.
But those Commodore 64 clones, they were somewhat official, because I know I was actually looking for ICs, because I got a C64 Reloaded, and it only comes with SIF sockets without any ICs. So you have to bring a set of your own. And I actually saw that Commodore released a Paul M version of the VIC, the video interface.
The VIC 20, I guess we had the VIC 20 here.
No, VIC. I mean the VIC as the ship name for the
Commodore. Okay.
Video interface.
Okay.
I think it was called Video Interface Controller or something like that. VIC. It's actually name of this. No, the VIC 20. The VIC 20 is another stuff.
Okay.
Different. is the predecessor of the Commodore 64. The VIC is actually the name of the graphic chip, and they have a version for NTSC, Paul, and Paul M. So there is one for the Brazilian market. Commodore did it like that. So I guess those clones are under license, like for the Argentinian market. They had the Trine C64, which was also official Z64s, but made in Argentina. I think it was something like similar. Because otherwise, why would they make official ICs for a country that not producing?
Didn't have the
exactly. I think it's just more like an import export trick.
Probably.
That's my guess. You know, that's my guess. Yeah.
I see. Hmm. Yeah. You mentioned Argentina. It's interesting because even the clone consoles we had here were sold there. So some Brazilian companies exported clone consoles to Argentina because they didn't have Nintendo products there yet. So CCE, which is this company I told you that manufactured my own clone, they had this Turbo game console they released shortly after, and they stopped selling it here in 1993 because Nintendo came here and told everybody to stop selling those consoles. But some companies obliged, others not, and CCE stopped producing here and started selling in Argentina, I think, around that time.
That's interesting. I would have to listen back to my interview with Argentina, because I had that too already.
You should ask him about the Turbo game console, if they had it there. I believe they had it, and in that book I told you I just bought, they speak about it too.
Somebody should make a Kickstarter for an English translation.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would be very interested in doing the translation also, and It would be
in doing the translation.
Really? Yeah, I would like to work.
If you are paid for it, okay.
Yeah, that's why I was, because that takes time, you know, and that's something. But I believe that, I don't know, sometimes someone will get an English version, maybe, because...
There have been a lot of Kickstarters in the past for regional books in English. Books from Sweden, books from Japan, a lot of projects. There was just a book from about the Monkey Island games from France, and there was a Kickstarter translating it to English. I'm one of the backers, so.
Interesting. I'm going to talk to the guys who organized the book, the editors. I have the contact. I'm going to tell them that there is interest in an English translation. I really think it should be done, because it's an important part of the gaming history in Brazil, and I believe in the world too, because even if the Brazilian market is somewhat closer to the rest of the world, we had less influence, for instance, than Europe did, or Japan, or the US. Even so, I think we had so many people here playing those games, you know, that it should be known for other people in other countries.
Now the question is, are you actually having an eye on what's happening outside of Brazil? I mean, for example, right now, Bitmap Bureau from UK works on a second Xenocrisis.
Yeah, yeah, I know those stuff. Yeah. And Xenocrisis is one game is in my wish list for so long, and I just didn't buy it yet because. Unfortunately, they don't sell the bundle of the PC game plus the Mega Drive game. You have to buy one or the other, you know? Some other companies do this stuff where you can buy the... For instance, there's that game... what's the name? Tanglewood. You know the game?
Sure. I have it too.
They sold it on Steam, and you can play both versions. You can play the PC version, and you can play the Mega Drive version, because you have the ROM, so you can play it on your flash card or your Mega Drive 2017. And the Xenocrisis stuff isn't the same. So I was hoping that someday they would do something like a bundle.
But couldn't you get it from the gray market, the keys for Steam cheaper?
Oh, the keys, yeah. But I wanted to buy the cartridge, you know, and to import it, it's expensive, you know. That's the problem. To buy it from them to ship to Brazil, I don't know how much it would cost, and you know.
Oh, I mean, let's have a look. I mean, Bitmap Bureau. I mean, I did an interview with them.
Nice.
Well, yeah, you know. You know me, I'm never giving up. Yeah. Well,
I was just saying that you guess the best, you got the best people here. I just told you on Twitter that I didn't know what I was doing here, because everybody talks is super interesting, you know. So
yeah, well, the thing is I totally forgot what I said. I was actually planning to dig more into the Brazilian stuff, but the handling of getting a game from the Brazilian market getting shipped to me was such a horrible experience that I was like, not worry about it anymore.
From this day on, it will be easier for you.
Oh, yeah. I hope I get a new job really soon. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know how it is in Brazil, but being let go from a company before Christmas is not very helpful.
No
companies for workers before Christmas.
No, I'm in a very fortunate position, because I'm a professor at a federal university here.
That so is why your English is so good.
Maybe.
good educational background, no?
That's part of it, but not exactly, because many of my colleagues don't speak English the same way I do.
Really?
Even if they because it's not everyone, you know? It's most people, but not everyone.
And now the final question, where can people find your stuff?
Well, people can find my stuff on YouTube, on my page is my channel is Kirinea C-H-I. I was just spelling in Portuguese. C-H-I-R-I-N-E-A. Okay. It's a bit hard, but it's there. And you can also find me at Twitter at the same handle. And there you can find other links, because maybe the links are too long to spell here. Awesome. But one other place you can find me is my wiki page, which is Enciclopédia do Videogame Brasileiro in Portuguese. But you will find this link both on my Twitter and my YouTube channel.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thanks for the time. Okay.
Jörg, thanks so much.
Thanks for the time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.